Khalashing for Khalas? Want to bribe or fine dine? Stay tuned to High FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bagati for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
Fora and Kath McGrath, welcome to the show. And ladies, tell me, did you start writing this book because you have personal feeding experiences yourself?
No, Kath and I actually, we have a history as professionals working together. So Kath is the dietitian that I would go for my tricky babies. And we, many years ago, actually wrote a book together called Feeding Sense. And I'll never be sitting next to Kath on a flight home from a talk we'd done together. And we said, one day we've got to do this recipe book. And so it was kind of on the cards. I don't know, Kath, probably for about 5 years before we actually put pen to paper. And yeah, so it more came from a professional perspective and just wanting to really equip moms with amazing recipes. That's I think where it was birthed.
Okay. So now what we're going to be talking about mainly is weaning. And I just wanted you to explain to everybody, because I certainly wasn't in the mold of what you have created in this wonderful book. I mean, I was one of those mothers who sort of went, oh, okay, 12, 14 weeks, right. Time for chicken soup and cereal. But, you say there is no science that points to the exact week, when, how, who, when we should start, but tell me a little bit about your feelings on, what do you call it? Different kinds of weaning, okay? There's the baby-led weaning, okay? And there's the collab weaning, which you talk about in the book. Now, baby-led weaning, let's chat a bit about that. Who'd like to chat first?
We look at two approaches, so the baby-led weaning and more kind of professional parent-directed. Collab is a combination of the two.
Right.
But baby-led weaning is basically a process by which a baby gets to explore the foods and gets to choose what foods they're going to eat within an environment where food is quite readily available in appropriate sizes in a safe way for them to take and to try. And it's one of the approaches we do think highly of, but it needs to be alongside guidance from a mom so that the baby does also get the nutrition and is able to thrive and grow and experience lots of flavors, lots of tastes, lots of different foods. So we like to bring the two methods together and make and go further and just explain how Collab then was birthed.
Right. Okay, so I don't know, somehow I'm always so nervous with this sort of baby-led weaning because I could never imagine putting food on the baby's chair, let's say, and almost letting it help itself. First of all, I was petrified of choking. That's number one. I'm beside myself about choking. And number two, are they really going to get what they should be getting?
Yeah, so that's, I mean, you've kind of highlighted the things that Kath and I were concerned about. Well, first of all, let's just deal with the first issue of choking. Babies of that age, if the food is soft and not things like nuts and hard, you know, pieces of carrot and apple, as long as they're steamed and they can kind of squish between your fingers if you squish them, they're unlikely to choke on it. They may gag on it because it's a new texture, but that's very different from choking. So babies actually can take in quite a bit at that age. The difficulty, and when we talk about that age, baby-led weaning talks about introducing solids really from 7 months onwards and a baby can actually grasp the food. And I think what Kath was alluding to just now is that waiting to introduce solids till 7 months is quite late for a number of reasons. There's this amazing window of opportunity where babies will engage with novelty really readily, and you kind of miss that if you start solids too late. And so any earlier, you won't be able to do baby-led weaning because the baby can't actually hold on to the food and get sufficient in. So that's why we talk about doing a combination where we actually do have a mom doing mushed food in a bowl for babies, but that as soon as the baby actually is showing interest in holding and chewing and self-feeding, then you do a combination of self-feeding or baby-led weaning and the bowl approach. And so then you have this kind of combined little dance between the mom and the baby until eventually the little baby starts to take on more responsibility and the mom actually can let up with the spoon-feeding and the baby can then self-feed. So that's kind of what collab weaning is all about, because it's a collaboration as opposed to putting the control in one, either the mom or the baby's domain.
Uh-huh. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about collab. But before we talk about that, just something, you know, a few people have been asking me questions before I came onto the show, and they were asking me, surely you need to get that iron supplement before 6 months. Is it important to get that extra bit of iron before? Is there enough iron in the mother's milk or the formula?
Up until 6 months old, babies still have their iron stores, which they are born with. So in the last, unless they were premature, so in the last trimester of pregnancy, there's a laying down of iron stores from the mom, and it lasts the baby up until between 4 and 6 months. Mm-hmm. A baby who's exclusively breastfed will possibly need an iron supplement from around about 6 months, because the breast milk iron quantity is quite little, and they're still trying to get onto a range of solids that will have iron-rich foods in it. Formula-fed babies tend to get higher iron volumes, and they often don't need additional iron in a supplemental form, and they can kind of wait it out until they've got the food base as an iron food source. So the answer to your question is, up until 6 months, they're fairly safe and stable if they weren't premature with amounts of iron. And from 6 months, exclusively breastfed babies would need some iron supplementation as they slowly get in onto their solids. Formula-fed babies, unlikely to need. But I would just advise anyone that is concerned or thinks their child might need supplementation to just check with their pediatrician, and especially if you are using your quite strong irons. There are some very good products which are more gentle iron products, and those could be used possibly without the advice of
Okay. So the
pediatrician, but otherwise, yeah. Really, yes.
So now this collab weaning, this whole philosophy of weaning is absolutely fascinating. So can we try and compartmentalize that? And you know, I know that it's an acronym for, well, what is it? For you explain it. You better than me.
So I love acronyms because it helps people to remember things.
Love them.
Kath, you know what? That word collaboration is what it's all about. Let's have a look if we can do an acronym. And so we sat down and we came up with the acronym COLAB. And the C stands for cues, which means that we don't wean according to a prescribed date or prescribed time in a baby's life, but we wean according to the baby's cues. So that's the first thing, cues. The O is for own personality, which is a totally unique part of the book, because we talk about how babies actually wean and love food according to want to engage with. Like, you've got some babies who, like our social butterflies, who love strong flavors. My daughter was one, and she loved olives as a baby, and she loved lemons and spicy food, and to this day she loves Mexican food. So she's a social butterfly. And then you've got other ones who are much more reticent, and so they want to go with the bland food, things like porridges and oats and apple and so on. So you've got your O, which stands for own personality. Then you've got led by science, which was very much Kath's area of the book, where, you know, she kind of brought the real science. Kath is really an expert in that area, about feeding. And as we know, whether you're talking about adult diet or child's diet, but even more so baby diet, there's a huge amount of myth and controversy around diet and dieting and introducing of solids. And so we needed to bring the science to it. And then the A stands for age appropriate. So what should you wean onto when and how much? That's what's age appropriate. And the B was for kind of really having this kind of baby-led or baby-friendly approach, we call it, which is that a mom and the baby do this dance together of moving onto solids at a pace that works for the baby and for the mom as well. So that's the acronym CoLab.
Okay. I must say that I loved the section on the personalities of the baby. I loved that. Because I want to tell you that I think that my kids have different personalities every day of the week. It was quite difficult. But anyway, so tell us a little bit about the characters of children that you talk about.
Yeah, so you've got, I mean, all of us have a sensory profile, which is really the way in which we engage with sensory information in the world. So some of us are on the more sensitive side, and others of us are on the more kind of gregarious side, where we want to seek out sensory stimulation. So that would be like somebody who's absolutely loving things like mountain biking and kite surfing and kind of going the faster the better. Those people really have a need for speed. So we have our social butterflies, our settled babies, our slow to warm up babies, and our sensitive babies. And they wean very differently onto solids. So, you know, that really was the idea behind that chapter.
Chalashing for chalas? Want to bry or fine dine? Stay tuned to Hi FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
Terrific. As I said, everybody needs to go out and decide what their child is. I think, as I say, all mine were different characters every day of the week. But anyway. And when would you happily move on to solids? When would be your happiest period? 17, 18, 19 weeks?
So if you look at the science, the body physiologically is equipped to handle solids. So the baby's body can manage solids, which means the organs are mature enough to digest the solid proteins and foods and that. From about 17 weeks, so around about 4 months, we know that it's safe to start introducing solid foods or complementary foods to your baby's milk diet. And by the age of 6 months, you really want to have started so that you can start to also introduce some of the allergen foods, because foods like egg and dairy and soya and fish and nuts, your nut butters, your tree nut butters, your peanut butters. It's really important that your baby's exposed to those foods before the age of 7 months, because it will mean that the baby's chance of tolerating those foods are higher than if you don't expose. In the past, we would say wait until a year or 9 months before you start egg or things like that. And now we know that we were actually really just causing a problem, because the baby just only at a year see the egg and think it's a foreign body and attack it and have an allergic reaction. So it increases the risk of allergies if you expose your baby to those allergens too late. So between the age of 17 weeks and 6 months, 4 to 6 months is when it's a good, safe time and important time to start introducing your baby to solid foods.
Okay, and when you talk about real foods and pure foods, you're literally talking about a beautiful butternut that you've grown in your garden. That's the best, of course. And in this lockdown period, I've never grown so many vegetables in my life. So my grandchildren can have some lovely, real, pure food. And how would you make, okay, to start off with, obviously we're going to have a teaspoon or two of butternut or carrot or whatever, but how do we make it more interesting, not so boring and bleh, to put it?
You know, babies, you can start on something like butternut, because remember, butternut is not boring. The ones have been on breast milk for some time that butternut does bring novelty. So starting with something like butternut or any of your yellow squashes is really super. But there does come a time that you don't want to leave your baby on that too long. So what we do in Weaning Sense is we introduce, and Kat's recipes are incredible, she introduces variety in and mixes. So you have butternut but with sweet potato and then maybe some cinnamon with it. And so you start to introduce the herbs and spices quite early on into the little one's journey.
Especially if they're social butterflies.
Especially if they are social butterflies. And, you know, a lot of people went wrong. I mean, my little one who's now 20, was weaned onto rice cereal. That was the one I didn't. And actually, if you think about that for a social butterfly, that is the most boring thing on the face of the earth. And we used to stick with that for like months and months. And 2 months down, we'll be having rice cereal. And then we'd be wondering why they became fussy eaters. But the reason they were being fussy was because they were over rice cereal long ago, and they were ready to go for all that wonderful real food and vegetables and then the spices and flavors.
Right. And incorporating herbs, that would also be a good idea, I would imagine.
Absolutely. I think the more of those natural flavorings that you incorporate, just add such flavor and taste and experience.
You're right. I mean, I remember putting cereal into my baby's bottles because why the poor child had reflux, and you put cereal in the bottle and you cut a thing in the teat. Oh, what we used to do to those poor children.
that crazy piece of advice still actually does the rounds. And because you've mentioned it, it is worth us just pointing out that is a particularly bad method of weaning babies or of feeding babies. And, you know, to join up with that, I am really opposed to even the puree sachets that moms give to babies to just suck out the top, because I think there's a reason why babies have kind of solid food that's mushed and mashed and actually fed on a spoon or hand fed, because that's how they develop all of their kind of oral muscles and kind of the precursors to chewing. And I think that, you know, putting food into a liquid format and then kind of sucking it as opposed to actually spooning it in and chewing it is really not the best thing. So certainly with putting cereal into babies' bottles, it's not a good idea. And it doesn't make babies sleep better either, which was the other kind of rumor that used to do the circuits. You know, it's not a good practice at all.
No, and I think it's also very increases the risk of obesity.
Yes, absolutely.
As well. But I also, just to add to what Meg was saying about sachets, we always talk about, Meg and I talk about hidden food. Food needs to be visible for the baby to see the food. We need the baby to eat. We eat with all our senses, not just our mouth and the taste. We eat with our touch, we eat with our eyes, we eat with the sound the food makes in our mouth, we eat with the smell of food. And if you don't have any engagement with food or know what actually you're sucking out of this sachet, you actually only have a quarter of the feeding experience. And that also sets babies up to be very resistant to new foods and what they look like. And so we really, really encourage our moms to engage the babies with all these senses with the food.
Okay, while we're talking about senses and tastes and things like that, the myth about what a mother eats while she is breastfeeding. What should she stay away from? Or is that nonsense? Because one pediatrician says one thing, another says another. One says, I ate chili and curry my whole pregnancy and while I was breastfeeding, and my baby's fine. Maybe she's a social butterfly. Again.
You have to, you know what? There is no foods that, no healthy, good, wholesome foods that a mom should stay away from during pregnancy or during breastfeeding. So the only food she would need to stay away from that would be high risk would be food she's allergic to. So if she has a peanut allergy, we do not want to eat in peanuts. But other than that, cabbages, broccoli, all of those are so important to include, because both in your last trimester with the amniotic fluid, those flavors come through into your amniotic fluid, which the baby gets to swallow. It starts to develop the taste buds. And then breast milk is wonderful because it also transports those flavors from the different vegetables and the different spices and herbs and that into your breast milk. So breast milk can actually be differently flavored for each baby's feed of the day. So it's quite fun. So it's a lovely way, if you are able to breastfeed, to evoke those and stimulate those taste buds in your baby.
Yeah.
Chalashin for chalas? Want to braai or fine dine? Stay tuned to Chai FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bagatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
You were actually talking about allergies, and if a mother's allergic to peanuts, obviously she's not going to eat them. And I was shocked to read in your book, Allergy Sense, that 1 in 40 children between the ages of 1 and 3 will be diagnosed with a food allergy. Now, it's crazy. I mean, I remember in the old days it was just lactose and all they, you know, and even then, I mean, I'm talking from experience myself. My son is highly allergic, and you know, the only way that the pediatrician said they can really tell was if they took a biopsy, which they did do, and they found out exactly, you know, what he was allergic to. But, I mean, those soy milk is just a no-no, correct? Or what do you feel about soy milk?
It depends on the context in which you are using it. Formula soya milk can actually be quite life-saving in some cases.
Well, it was for us.
So I know that there's been a lot of fear around soya, and especially when it comes to boys because of the phytoestrogen. But what I always assure moms is that the formula companies are very aware of that, and they have a standard by which they have to maintain in order to keep the level of phytoestrogen low in their product. So it's probably the safest and best controlled way to give soya to your baby should your baby not be able to be on cow's milk formula. So overindulging in soya products is not a good idea for any of us, but having the soya formula is safe, and it definitely won't do your baby harm.
Uh-huh. Okay. But I must say your book, Allergy Sense, is terrific. So that's another one that everybody needs to buy. Allergy Sense as well. And, another thing I wanted to ask, helping moms to get their babies to sleep through. That was another big question that was asked.
Yeah. So, look, there are a couple of things, you know, and seeing that we're talking about weaning, you know, there are links between feeding and sleep. There's no doubt. I mean, one simple one when a baby is very little or even older is to separate feeding from sleep time. In other words, always make sure that your baby is awake and that you're not feeding them to sleep, because it does cause habits. And so that's one link between feeding and sleep that we need to watch for. Another link between feeding and sleep is that if you feed your baby bottles at a time once it's inappropriate for them to have night feeds, and they become dependent on having them as night feeds, it means that they'll wake up more regularly at night for those milk feeds. So, for instance, a one-year-old or a two-year-old who's having 3 bottles of milk at night will continue to wake for those bottles. So there is a link, a negative link, as it were, between milk feeds and sleep. And then there's also another link, and that is the link that at a certain age, babies do start to need more nutrition. And it often happens somewhere between 4 and 6 months of age. And it just means that if you're choosing not to wean, you need to increase the amount of milk you're giving your little one. But otherwise, if you are choosing to wean between 4 and 6 months, which is completely appropriate, you would then choose to actually start to wean them. The misnomer comes that parents think that as soon as they start to wean their babies, they will automatically sleep through, and that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And for a couple of reasons. One is that it takes time to have sufficient of the right things to help you sleep better to get into the diet. It doesn't happen on night one of you know, 2 teaspoons of butternut, obviously. But certainly we do, you know, one of the things that I say to moms is don't try and fob off solids for as long as possible towards 6 months, because you don't want to introduce solids, and then also not give your baby the milk that they're needing extra, or the extra night feed, because otherwise you're going to have a baby who's waking throughout the night. You're going to keep sticking the dummy in the mouth, and what ends up happening then is they develop a dummy habit. So, you know, there is this association between weaning and sleep for sure. I think if I had to give mums a couple of tips around sleep, certainly having a good established bedtime routine is a very good idea, and that will end with a milk feed, but separated from not letting them fall asleep on that feed. You do need to have the right number of day sleeps. That's very, very important, because day sleeps begets night sleep. So the mm-hmm. more baby sleeps in the day, or the right amount, shall I say, not the more, but the right amount of sleep in the day will help babies to sleep better at night. And then from 17 weeks onwards, babies do need to learn to self-soothe a little bit, which means that mums need to assist their little ones to learn to self-soothe. Because if you're always doing all the work for them and rocking them to sleep or feeding them to sleep, they're obviously going to keep up waking up for that. So sleep is thorny. It's a complicated issue. We could do an entire show.
I'm sure.
Little nuggets that that mums can use to try and get their little ones to sleep better.
Yeah, I just remember in my day, we were taught to give them, after they've had their full bottle or full feed at night, to teach them to skip a feed was to give them water so that they wouldn't wake up for the water anymore. I mean,
it's... Giving a baby water at night, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's not always a go-to thing. You know, it's in certain circumstances. So, for instance, if you've got a baby who's had really good nutrition during the day, they've been feeding well, they're gaining weight nicely, and I usually only recommend it from the time that they're over 12 weeks or even a little older than that, then there's no reason why you can't, instead of one of the milk feeds, give them one water feed. But again, you've got to really know that they're not waking for a real reason. That would be, that they're not waking because they're hungry, that they're just waking because they're in a bit of a habit. So then you can have a little water feed occasionally at night. But, you know, don't do it too little, because otherwise you can disrupt your milk supply if they're not on solids yet. And just try, you know, I always say, and it came across in the book, I think, very well, is that try and respond to the baby's real needs. And I know as a mom, it's sometimes hard to know that, but if your baby's not gaining weight well, or if your milk supply is low, then maybe they do really need that extra feed at night, and then fobbing them off with water is not a good idea. So it's not always a go-to.
Chalashin for Chalas. Want to braai or fine dine? Stay tuned to Chai FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
The best way of cooking? Another question that's just come in. Best way of cooking the vegetables, obviously, is steaming. I would have imagined.
I think... The important thing is that you want to retain the flavor of the veggies and the nutrients and the fruit, whatever you're choosing. So steaming can do that, and be careful of over steaming or overcooking. Using Instapots is also a really nice way that moms are doing more and more. Baking is also a lovely way. Putting apples on a baking tray with a little bit of water underneath, so it's a combination of oven and steaming. It's also a lovely way with veggies and fruit to retain the nutrition and the nutrients. And then if you're cooking your proteins, what is lovely to do with proteins, and we do that a lot in the book, is mixing your fruits with your protein foods, because the acidity of a fruit, which is natural acidity, helps break down the fibers of the proteins, like the chicken or the beef or the lamb, etc. And it just makes them a little bit more tender and easier just to digest for the baby. So those are just a few key things that can
What kind of fruit would you put in, sort of like an apple?
So the important thing with all our fruits and veggies that Meg and I talk about is they need to be seasonal. So whatever is in season, in other words, it's seasonal stuff, is reasonably priced. It's easily accessible at most places, and it tastes really nice. So the apple tastes sweet, or the strawberry tastes sweet. So if the fruit you're buying is tasteless, you've got to ask, and very expensive, you've got to ask yourself if it really is in season locally. So
yeah.
Whatever fruits you want to mix and match and have fun with, there's no rules. Apple does work brilliantly with a lot of the protein foods. Pears work lovely, but are not always as easily and always long in season. Even berries. Berries cooking with some protein foods can also be really fun. And so just don't be scared to experiment. You know, there's no right or wrong foods to mix together. Just have fun with it.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing, just to have fun with it. And then how long can we leave it in the freezer for? You know, if we pack it into little tubes or little Ziplocs or whatever, or ice tray, how long would we leave it in the freezer, maximum?
So if it's if it's well sealed, so in other words, it's not exposed to the air of the freezer, you can, and the freezer is, you freeze it in the back of the freezer, preferably in a deep freeze, then you can freeze it for up to 3 months very safely.
Right.
If it is the freezer that's kind of more like an open door freezer and it's going to end up being quite close to the front, I normally say to mom about 6 weeks or so.
Right, and warming it up, still in those, I definitely know that's not a microwave, that's the last resort, but I suppose you just use one of those little, we used to put boiling water into them, into the bottom of those little pots, feeding bowls.
You don't need anything really fancy, just if you can remember, take out the food blocks for the next day, you know, the night before for the next day, so that they can defrost at room temperature or in the fridge.
Right.
And then you can just put them even just on in a little cup over a little bowl of hot boiling water and just stir it and it breaks it down. And even just add a little bit of boiling water to it just to quicken up the defrosting. But it's really quick and easy in the ice cubes.
Okay. Well, I hope that has helped our young ladies out there. And as I urged them before and I urged them again, just go out and get the book. It's worth it. I mean, I was just looking at those magnificent pictures. You just make the food look so yummy for these little kids.
The other thing about the book is that I've got older kids and I cook the recipes out of there for my whole family. So I think, you know, a lot of people think, oh, it's just for weaning recipes. But actually, I mean, I think my favorite recipe in the book, I always say, is the easy peasy bread recipe. It's a wonderful stir-fried flour bread recipe. But there's lovely recipes for the whole family. So, I do encourage people to go out and get the book.
Okay, just one quick question, another one that's just come through now. If you're not too happy with a commercial cereal, what other cereals could you use?
Well, you can really, commercial cereals aren't great, and both Meg and I are not fans of them at all, because I think sometimes the box has more nutrition than the actual cereal inside. So try and find whole grains like your spelt, your millet. Oats is one of our favorites, and
yes,
we really enjoy working with oats. It's affordable, it's easily accessible, most moms don't struggle to cook it, but challenge yourself. I mean, spelt is a lovely grain. Millet is a lovely grain. And so those are different ideas, and you can blend them and make them into more like a powdery porridge. Sorghum is a lovely grain, the traditional kind of Maltabella porridges.
Yes.
That's wonderful. So really be wholesome, not with lots of ingredients added to it. Keep the grain simple and vary it. That's also what Meg and I really suggest, you know, that you vary your foods. And that's why we love variety. Because it's so important for the body to get used to. There are over 500 good healthy grains in this world or more. And you really want to expose your little ones to quite a few of them, because they each hold such wonderful values. So spelt, millet, oats, sorghum, those are all wonderful, wonderful grains.
Right. Okay, well, that's great. Okay, so I hope that answered you, Talia. And then, I think that's basically it. I think that's all we've got time for at the moment. So, ladies, thank you so much for joining me. It's been wonderful talking to you. And I must admit, I'm not ready to have another baby yet. Impossible. Okay. Wonderful to talk to you. And thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye. Bye.